1:47 to go in the game on fourth down and 9 for the Buffalo. Placement down. Bass's kick is up, and the kick is no good! A little prophecy! Tyler Bass has struggled, and he just misses the kick. And the Chiefs will take over at the point of the missed kick. Their own 34-yard line as Tyler Bass misses this wide to the right. Kansas City, for the sixth consecutive time, is going to the AFC Championship. Final score, Kansas City 27, Buffalo 24. The Chiefs are going to Baltimore to play for the Lamar Hunt Trophy.
Yes, they are. The Chiefs, I've been trying to tell people, I'm the one that's optimistic. Everybody's the negative Nelly out there. Dear Lord, people, you have Patrick Mahomes. Why are you so negative? The Bills. Oh, we're so scared of the Bills. Been screaming the last 2 weeks. What's so great about the Bills? Nothing. Nothing's great about the Bills. Said on this show Thursday, comes down to a kicking game. What'd I say, Dusty?
The Chiefs have a better kicker.
And that their kicker missed a 27-yarder yeah. last week and had one blocked.
Yeah.
What'd I say about the Chiefs? They don't have to be perfect. Just cut down on the mistakes. They'll be fine. That's what they did. The defense held them to 24, only 7 points in the second half. What'd we say the magical number is? 24.
24, yeah.
Chiefs scored more than 24. Worst case scenario, go to overtime. The Chiefs have been giving up more than 27 in a game this year. That was only one time against the Packers. 24 is the number. And the Chiefs should have had 34 if Andy Reid doesn't give the ball to Mecole Hardman at the goal line, which we'll get into. But I've been trying to tell people, you got to look at the great teams of all time, and the Chiefs are in that discussion. Their franchise is in that discussion. Your six straight AFC title games, that's only happened one other time in the history of the National Football League. All right? You've been to three Super Bowls, and you may possibly get to 4 in 5 years. You may win 3 in 5 years. I mean, you could go back-to-back, possibly. You're only 2 wins away from doing that. And I'm sitting here, and I'm looking at this, and I'm going, "Why?" This is why Chiefs fans need to chill out during the regular season. I saw Mitchell Schwartz put it out there. He said, rule from now on, you can't freak out about the Chiefs until at least December. Because it ain't about the regular season, people. It's about the postseason. You just have to be good enough to get into the playoffs. That's it. Look at the great teams of all time. Look at different sports. Did the Patriots have the number one seed and home field advantage every single time? The answer is no.
No.
Okay? Did the Cleveland Cavaliers with LeBron James, or Miami Heat with LeBron James, or the Chicago Bulls with Michael Jordan, or the Houston Rockets with Drexler and Olajuwon, did they always have the number one seed in the NBA playoffs? The answer is
no.
No. The answer is no. In fact, there have been times where LeBron's teams will have a 5 or 6 seed and get in there, and they like don't care. How about the Golden State Warriors? The Warriors have won it without being the one seed. They're not worried about the one seed that much. You know why? Because they know they're so damn good and they can flip a switch that they can win on the road. And this whole crap that people wanted to spew that I tried to tell everybody last week was overrated. Oh, good. Mahomes has never played a road playoff game, but he has played road games. He wins like 80% of his road games. The Chiefs are better on the road than at home this year, but nobody wants to take the time to research it. Mahomes did play a road playoff game. It was a Super Bowl in Tampa. Okay, so he's 0-1, really, in road games, in the playoffs. You thought Mahomes was going to be freaked out by this environment? I know I never thought that.
No.
I never once thought that. I thought this will add to his legacy. I said a few weeks ago, the Chiefs are going to beat the Bills in Buffalo. I said it on this show. And I said the Ravens are the team that worry me the most. The Bills don't worry me as much. And I said the Chiefs can beat anybody if they figure things out. And guess what? The last few years, people have been freaking out. Oh my God, the defense is so bad. How are we going to win? And then they win. Oh my God, special teams are so atrocious. How are we going to win? And they figured it out. And here we are. The offense, we drop too many passes. We commit too many penalties. What are we going to do in Buffalo? Oh, that's right. Buffalo makes mistakes too. They're not perfect. And if you watched them at all this year, you would have known that. We tried to tell you that. Listen, I felt very confident about the Chiefs' chances, and as we got closer to kickoff, I felt more and more confident and more and more confident and more and more confident. And even when the Chiefs were giving up run after run to the Bills, all I was sitting here saying is, hold them to field goals. You hold them to a few field goals, you'll be fine. The defense will make adjustments, as they have all freaking year. And guess what? They did again. And they won the game. What about all the drops? Yeah, during the regular season. But in the playoffs, you can have a drop or two. It's not the end of the world. How many drops the Chiefs have yesterday? I'd say one. Questionably one. Questionably. Justin Watson, I think the guy's hand might have got in there.
Dude was draping him, too. Like, right. Whether his hand was in there or not, like that was not like one of your normal right wide open over the middle drops like we've seen this
But
year.
If you want to call it a drop, fine. They had one.
And I don't even do that.
MVS was, he made two great. The one catch he made was insanely unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And this is something I've been putting out there here and there on this show the last few weeks. I've been sprinkling it in. And that is, are the Chiefs, like a lot of other great teams or dynasties, if you want to put the Chiefs in that word yet, are they simply bored by the regular season and they just want to get into the dance and then the focus becomes just lasered in and they flip a switch? And I think there is something to it. I mean, you see it with a lot of teams I just mentioned. The Bulls did it. The Cavaliers did it. The Miami Heat did it. The Warriors did it. The Patriots have done it. I think the Cowboys did it. The Niners have done it. Teams, when they go so deep in the playoffs year in and year out, they know it's a whole nother level. The Chiefs have been the five straight AFC title games. They've been the three Super Bowls. Travis Kelce, Patrick Mahomes, Chris Jones are three that pop into my head right off the bat. You know, and Andy Reid, by the way, is not going to show you everything during the regular season. That should be noted as well. The same thing with Steve Spagnuolo. So people are sitting here in week five. Why did we run this play? Why are we not bringing this defense? Because it's week five, okay? You don't need to show all your cards in week five. You get to the playoffs. Yesterday, Andy Reid said after the game, we were going to let everything out. Everything we had ready to go. And he said, and we still have a lot we didn't use. That tells you exactly what you need to know. Once you get into playoffs, it's balls to the wall, go. It is go. It is go time. Now, the only time you probably need to do it in the regular season is if your season is on the line to get into the playoffs. When you are in a do-or-die situation, everything is on the table. Every play should be on the available for you to run. But during the regular season, you know, you might have to be vanilla a little bit. You don't have to show your best stuff. And sometimes you show stuff that absolutely you're sitting there going, why did they run that play? Had no chance of working. It's just to put it on film. They're not even thinking they're going to run that play in the playoffs. Or they have it on film knowing there's a variable to that play that they're going to run in the playoffs. There is a lot of chess instead of checkers. The Chiefs play chess instead of checkers. You've heard that moniker before. Well, he's playing chess and he's playing checkers. There's a big difference. And Chiefs fans and most fans see the game as checkers. And the Chiefs and the great teams of all time see it as chess. You know what? We didn't get the one seed. Whoop-de-freaking-la-dee-da. We're really good. We can go win in Buffalo. We're not scared. We can go win in New York with the Chicago Bulls if we lose a game in Chicago. And you know what you usually do in the NBA? You just get it right back. You lose it, and then how many times did the Bulls just get it right back? The Lakers did it. The Celtics did it. The Pistons did it. These teams just go get it right back. Now, in the NFL, you can't get it right back, but you got to go win on the road. At some point, you got to win on the road. And to anybody that thought that the Chiefs couldn't win on the road because they hadn't played on the road was just not very bright. Okay, because all you had to know is, I understand it in Patrick Mahomes, every game of his whole career had never been on the road. But oh yeah, you play 8 road games and 9 home games, and you alternate now with 17-week schedules. So, and guess what? Think about how the Chiefs won yesterday. Did Mahomes throw for 500 yards?
No.
Did he throw 5 touchdowns?
No.
No. Did he run for 50 yards?
No.
He was 17 of 23 for 215 and 2 touchdowns. Did he have an amazing, magical play? No. There was nothing magical in regards to any unbelievable play he made yesterday. You know what he did? He played solid quarterback. He knows he has a defense now. He knows he doesn't have to take as many chances. He has a running game that, when Andy sticks with it. and he has a great kicker. Mahomes has, I've been trying to say this all year long, this is the most complete team that the Chiefs have ever had. Does that mean they're the best team the Chiefs have ever had? Probably not. Probably not. Although, once the offense gets up to snuff, you could argue it is.
If that offense plays like it did on
then it is.
Yesterday, then yeah, then it is. Probably is the best team the Chiefs have had.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, the best Chiefs team the Chiefs have had with Mahomes, with the defense the way they're playing, and then you add in the offense starting to figure things out. And I've been saying this week in and week out. The Chiefs can figure these issues out. All they've got to do is fix them themselves. It has nothing to do with the other team. Dropping the football has nothing to do with the other team, unless you're just feeling hearing footsteps every single time. Okay? It is about focus. And MVS, you got to give him credit. He made two outstanding plays yesterday. One was incredible. Okay? The only guy that really floundered in the moment was Mecole Hardman twice. Other than that, everybody else I thought did a good job. Did the defense struggle against the run? Yes, they absolutely did. I think missing Derek Nnadi hurt them more than people realize. He's a run stuffer. He was out with an injury. You know, losing Mike Edwards, I think, hurt a little bit communication-wise. Losing Willie Gay hurt against the running game as well, and he was going to be a spy. And despite losing their backup safety, who was a starter right off the bat, but despite losing Willie Gay, who was a big part of the defensive game plan against Josh Allen, despite losing Joe Tooney in the second half to a pectoral injury, despite all of that, the Chiefs won. On the road, minus one turnover margin. The Bills didn't turn it over one time. Chiefs had some chances to get them. So we're going to go through all the numbers here with the Chiefs. I have been Mr. Optimistic. I had the Chiefs winning this game. I felt great about them going into this game. I knew the Bills were banged up. We talked about it Thursday, how banged up they were. No Gabe Davis, a wide receiver, was huge yesterday. Absolutely huge. No Matt Milano out for the year. Huge. They were down the three healthy linebackers at the end of the game, which is huge. I told you that their pass rush, people are like, oh, what about the Chiefs' tackles in Buffalo? I've been trying to tell people the Bills' pass rush isn't what it once was. Von Miller, he hasn't recovered fully from his last injury. He was not, did they even call his name yesterday? I mean,
just to let everybody know he was back in the game.
That was it.
That was it.
Ed Oliver's a good pass rusher. He didn't do nothing. Joe Tooney shut him down. I mean, they didn't have the penalties from their tackles. I mean, Mahomes in the first two games of the playoffs has had virtually all day to throw. Now, that's going to change this Sunday. Baltimore is a different breed. They're a different animal, and they're not as hurt and banged up. They are outstanding defensively. It will be much tougher to win. But this game in Buffalo, to me, was absolutely a terrific setup. One, you got a chip on your shoulder because people aren't picking you. You're the underdog. How many times have the Chiefs been able to lavish as being an underdog in the postseason? Not very often. So now they're playing a little bit with house money because nobody thinks we're going to win for some dumb reason, except Wade and other people that really believe in 15 and the Chiefs. And we don't freak out when we got to go to Buffalo. And so you go into this game, you had a chip on your shoulder. The Bills are banged up tremendously on defense. The offense was showing signs the last few weeks. They showed signs against the Bengals. They definitely showed signs against the Dolphins. The biggest issue was simply turning field goals into touchdowns in the red zone. That was the next step. That's it. That was the next step. Because they've been scoring almost every possession, even if it's 3 points. We talked about it. The Chiefs could get 5 field goals and 2 touchdowns, and they win. Because their defense isn't going to give up more than 27. In fact, they've never given up 30 this year. Only one time they gave up 27. So the whole equation was there. Now, I know it's a little bit disturbing when it's 17-13 at halftime, and the Bills did march it down the field and ran the ball down their throat. But the Kansas City Chiefs defense did its job in the fourth quarter when they needed it the most. And the offense was tremendous all night long. And what's odd is that the Chiefs offense actually didn't do their job in the fourth quarter, but the defense picked them up. The offense picked up the defense for 3 quarters. The defense picked up the offense the fourth quarter. You know what that's called? Complementary football.
Yeah.
Complementary football. And, oh, yeah, they didn't have a kicker miss a 44-yarder either. That's not the reason the Bills lost this game, by the way. It was because of their kicker. Josh Allen, the last couple plays of that game, what was he doing? Like, he had Stephon Diggs wide open. I'm sitting here going, oh, my God, Diggs is wide open. He couldn't step into a throw because of a little bit of Chris Jones pressure that would have been a touchdown in the end zone. And then he rolls right. I mean, all they needed was a first down. I'm sitting here going, let them score a touchdown or stop them. But the worst case scenario is let them have a first down because they're going to milk the clock. And maybe we go to overtime, and who knows what happens there. So I'm sitting here going, well, the Chiefs either got to stop them on this 3rd and 9, or they've got to let them score. It's one way or the other. And thankfully, they missed the field goal. The Bills got stuck in a problem. The Bills mismanaged their game 2 years ago in Kansas City when they didn't do the right thing in regards to the kickoff. They did the wrong thing defensively with 13 seconds to go. And you know what? That is stuck in their crawl and in their head, because you know why I think they lost that game yesterday at the end, 2 years later?
They didn't want to leave time.
Exactly.
It was very obvious. Like, we're going to run this clock off, and now we're doing the wrong things because we're not doing the right thing.
They focused on the wrong thing, and that was their first priority. Here's how the priority should have been. First priority should have been score a touchdown.
Yeah, score.
Forget the time.
Yeah.
You got to score a touchdown. The second priority is then hopefully we can score with hardly any time on the clock. Instead, the Bills' priorities look like, one, let's score with no time on the clock, and then two, hopefully we score a touchdown. And that's all because of what Mahomes did with 13 seconds a few years ago in Arrowhead. And the Chiefs are in the Bills' head. It is obvious. And the Bills were so intent on trying to milk that whole clock down, they forgot the ultimate goal. And I understand their defense had not been really stopping the Chiefs, although the last two times they did.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But they played that game like there's no way we can allow any seconds on the clock. We got to milk this down to zeros. And I think they even would have settled for overtime, which is insane, with a field goal. The Bills totally, to me, mismanaged the game. But here's the thing. It does remind me a little bit of the Chiefs in the AFC title game against the Bengals when the Chiefs were down 3. Had they been down 4, the Chiefs, I think, still win that game and get a touchdown. But they got conservative because they didn't want to blow it. And they knew they had the field goal to tie it. The Bills, now this is a little bit different. The Bills had a longer field goal in this situation with worse weather conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And Josh Allen, you've got to get some yards on 2nd and 3rd down because that was they settled for a 44-yard field goal. And I knew, and I say I knew, my oldest son and I immediately said he's going to miss it wide right. You know why we said it? Because he was on the right hash mark.
Mm-hmm.
The ball on that end of the floor field was always going left to right. If it was from the left hash mark, Bass makes that kick. But from the right hash mark, we immediately, my oldest son, are like, dude, he's going to miss this. I said, I totally agree with you, son. He's going to miss it right. And he missed it right. So the Bills, once again, mismanaged things at the end of the game. And this was really, they had to win this game. I think the Bills are going to have some major changes during the offseason. And if they don't, then, well, they'll still be good. But the Chiefs are in their head. And it was proven at the end of that game yesterday. Welcome to the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Keeper Brothers Automotive, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. We're going to talk more Chiefs coming up in a little bit. But we want to recap high school sports with the wrestling tournament and also basketball at Colby. I'll recap the Colby Orange and Black Classic first here real quickly. It was a great weekend for the girls and boys. The girls surprised a lot of people, beating Hayes, a 5A school, in the first round. They beat the hometown Colby Eagles in the semifinals. And then they lost to a 5th-ranked team in the state in 4A Wellington, who was really good. 53-37 is the final. The girls were down the entire game, down by 18, battled back, cut it to 7 at 11-0 run, but came up short. But Sean Arima said, I want to come out here and win 2 games. And they won 2 games. I think a lot of people thought they'd lose to Hayes and win 2 on the backside of the bracket. No, they won their first 2, made it to the championship, gives them some confidence. They're now 7-4 on the season. Cassandra Thompson led the way with 10. And Cassandra Thompson and Addie Budke were named to the all-tournament team. And I could tell you that Peyton Remus probably deserved to have recognition there as well. Although Peyton has been all-tournament team the last couple of years, so spread the wealth a little bit there. But I thought she played well, too. And so Beloit, a really good tournament. The Beloit girls, second place out at Colby. Also, all-academic tournament team was Marley File for Beloit and Jaden Brooks, who is on the cheer team for Beloit. So congratulations to all four of those young ladies for their all-tournament recognition. The Beloit boys suffered their first loss of the season against 6A Olathe North. Second straight year they met in the finals. Beloit looked great against Ulysses in the first round, winning by 21. They looked spectacular against Colby, beating the Eagles on their home-away-from-home floor at the event center by 23 in the semis. Championship game, Olathe North jumped out 21-7 lead. Beloit came back to cut it to 5, but Olathe North is just way too athletic and way too quick for Beloit. I mean, it's just not a good matchup for Beloit. Not a good matchup for most teams against Olathe North. Olathe North, really good, and they made 11 threes. The only way in my opinion, the only way Beloit beats Olathe North, they played them 10 times, would be Olathe North has to miss a whole bunch of open threes.
Mm-hmm.
Because you really can't play man against them. Beloit doesn't match up athletically man-to-man. There's no way. You have to try it. And there's some possessions they can, but long-term they can't. And then you go zone. That's your only other option. They got too many talented players to play box and one, triangle two, junk defenses. So it's either a zone or it's man-to-man. Man's not going to work in that matchup very much. And so you go zone, and then you got to hope they miss shots. And against Goodland, they missed some shots. And that was a one-point game in the fourth quarter. They end up winning by 10. Against Beloit, they didn't miss shots. They made 11 threes. So your best chance of beating Olathe North, at least for Beloit, if they would meet them again, ever again, would be, to me, you just got to hope they miss some shots because they're that good. They're so athletic. It's insane. They got a guard that he don't have an ounce of fat on him. He's built like a brick house. And holy shnikes, he's a strong kid. And Olathe North's really, really good. So this will do nothing but help Beloit. I think, you know, sir, honestly, I have a kid on the team. I know that he was ticked off and not happy that they finished in second. And boy, in the pictures, he really proved that.
I could see that, yeah.
He was a little pissed off. He wanted to win badly.
Absolutely.
And I understand it. He's a senior. And Beloit's never won the Orange and Black Classic. They've been in the championship game six times. Mm. They've never won it. They've also been in the state championship game six times and never won it. What are the odds of that? I mean, the law of averages don't make sense.
No.
That's just, like, cruel, right? It's like the Bills going to four straight Super Bowls and not winning it.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd think you'd win one, right? So, you know, hopefully Beloit can win it all this year. You know, if at first you got to get the state, and then hopefully you can make a run and win it all. And you got to get to that state title game, and that's a long ways off yet. But that, my son, you know, he's like, we could beat him. We know we could have beat him. And I'm like, yeah, well, not today. No, not today, unfortunately. But so he wasn't very happy that they lost. He wanted to win really badly. But still, it was a really good tournament for Beloit. And Olathe North is absolutely legitimate. Bryce Beisner had 22, 11 for 11 from the foul line. Eli Johnson with 14. Bryce was all-academic tournament team. And then Bryce Beisner and Noah Gershner were all-tournament team. Noah shot the ball extremely well the first two games, 9 of 13 from 3. And then struggled in the final game. And as I said earlier, Peyton Remus, I think, was deserving of getting recognition all tournament team. And there's no doubt in my mind Eli Johnson should have been, and I know he was, considered, I'm sure, for all tournament team. You only can get so many spots, though. And I remember last year, my son didn't make an all tournament team, and our coach said, listen, you know, I thought he was deserving, but there's only so many spots. And you got to win the championship usually to get three guys on the all-tournament team. You don't win the championship, that's what happens. So last year, my son missed out on all-tournament team, but it was deserving. I think it was Eli's turn this year to be deserving and not get on it. And I will make a bold prediction that Eli Johnson will be on the Orange and Black's all-tournament team next year. Bold prediction. I don't think it's bold at all.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know how far you're going on the limb there, but if he plays, he's probably going to be pretty important to that team. So I would, I would imagine he's got a very good chance to do that.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And Bryce and Eli both had a dunk.
Yeah,
it was a great follow dunk by Beisner off. I think it was a miss by maybe Eli or Quinn, and then Eli had a nice two-handed jam too. So there were definitely highlights, and Beloit played well. Beloit boys will not go undefeated this year. I don't know if anybody really thought that for sure, but they have a chance to have a special great year. It's been special so far. They're 10-1, and they won't play a team that athletic or that good the rest of the year. So Beloit can play with anybody in 3A. Does that mean they're going to win it all? No. Does it mean they can? Yes. They're definitely one of the contenders. And these tournaments midseason, playing different teams from different classifications, even higher classifications, I think in the end help you. And I think it'll help the Beloit girls and the Beloit boys to play teams that are that good, because Olathe North very well could be in the 6A state tournament again. They made it last year.
Mm-hmm.
And Wellington girls, I think, will probably be at state again in 4A. And so I think it'll help both these teams. All right, Beloit Wrestling Invitational. Dusty had recaps and he had reports throughout the days on Friday and Saturday with that.
Yeah, the 54th annual Beloit Wrestling Invite. You can find the complete results at ncksports.com. Two area athletes did win championships. Rogan Monty took the title for the second year in a row as a sophomore here. He won the 113-pound weight class. He's now 19-1 on the season, 60-1 on his career. He beat a very good wrestler and rider, Dimple Wolf, from Colby there, who only had one loss going in as well. A great win there for Brogan, and a championship there Saturday evening at 215 pounds.
Eli Franklin of Smith Center took first place, moving to 24-2 for the season. So it's a couple area champions. Beloit had two other placers. Brody Boudreaux was fourth at 215, and Wyatt McMillan finished in fifth at 106. And for Smith Center, they had three other placers. Carson Montgomery was second at 285. Hard-fought tournament for him. Luke Franklin took fourth at 190, and Parker Hutchinson was sixth at 150. So that's a look at the individuals that placed this weekend. Abilene won the team title, and from the radio guy I know in Abilene, he had posted it's their first championship at the Beloit Invitational since 2000. Mm. So nice win there for Abilene. Tucker Sell was the most outstanding wrestler from Abilene as well. And then, again, you can find the full results for the Beloit Invite at nckssports.com. There is just a little bit of activity going on today as far as high school sports are concerned. Osborne and Smith Center wrestling teams will be at the Superior Nebraska Invitational this afternoon at 3 o'clock. And there's a couple makeup high school basketball games. Rock Hill's at Lawrence Nelson, Nebraska tonight. And Sylvan Lucas is hosting Natoma. You can always find the local sports schedule also on the website at nckssports.com.
All right, coming up on the sports ticket, we'll talk more Chiefs. We'll hear from Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. Also hear from Bill Self and Josh Eilert, West Virginia, knocking off the number three team in the land in Morgantown. What a huge upset and what a big win for Josh Eilert, the Osborne, Kansas native. Happy for him. Jerome Tang will talk about another good win for K-State, rallying to win. They're finding ways to win, and that's a sign of a good team. And the K-State women continue to win but had a big loss off the court. We'll explain all that coming up on The Ticket, brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit.
Son of a...
Batteries are on sale now at Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Don't wait till it won't start. Stop by today for a free battery test. We always install batteries for free, but right now, AC Delco batteries are on sale $20 off. If you do need a jump, we're happy to help you with that too. Find us just south the courthouse in Beloit or online at KieferBrothers.com.
Snap by Ferguson, hold by Martin, kick by Bass is on the way, and it is no good. No good, wide to the right. Second and three here, Mahomes under center. Makes the snap, hand off to Pacheco, right up the gut, and he's got the first down, and that'll do it. And the season will come to an end yet again in the divisional round of the playoffs for the Bills. The Bills are only left thinking about what could have been as their arch nemesis in the playoffs strikes again. The third time in 4 years, Buffalo's postseason is ended prematurely by the Kansas City Chiefs.
And now the Bills are going to have a whole offseason ahead of them, wondering, playing the what-if game.
That was a perspective from the Bills radio announcing crew on the final call and the missed field goal for the Bills. And for a second there, I felt sorry for him. Actually, I do. Were the Chiefs.
Listen, the Bills, it's hard not to feel sorry for them.
They've had so much heartbreak, been so close. And it is ironic, though. It is ironic. It is crazily ironic. But in 2017 NFL draft, on the first day of the draft, the Bills traded the 10th overall pick to the Kansas City Chiefs to draft Patrick Mahomes. The Bills made it possible for the Chiefs to have Mahomes, and now Mahomes is a major thorn in their side. The Bills got the 27th overall pick, a third-round pick, and a 2018 first-round pick for the 10th overall pick, which turned into be Patrick Mahomes. I'd say it's worked out pretty well for the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, the Bills have their quarterback, and that's great and all, but he can't beat Mahomes and the Chiefs in the playoffs. He's 0-3. And, you know, kind of reminds you about, you know, Manning and versus Brady, except Manning came through the third time. There were a whole bunch of similarities. There was something put out there that Brady was 2-0 against Manning, and then Manning got a home game finally. In the third attempt, Manning beat Brady. This was the third attempt for Allen. It was Manning's first chance to have a chance to beat Brady at home. Allen had his first chance at home in the playoffs yesterday. It was Brady's seventh season in the league. It's Mahomes' seventh season in the league, 6 years as a starter. And you know what date it was? It was January the 21st, the same day of year that Manning won in the third meeting in the playoffs. And so it's like, wow, here we go. This is going to happen. And no, Mahomes and the Chiefs ruined that whole statistic.
Sorry.
It's too bad. It's too bad. For the sixth straight year, the Chiefs are headed to the AFC Championship game after a 27-24 win over the Bills. My 10-year-old son predicted the exact score and got it right. You said 27-24, but you had the Bills winning.
Yeah.
I had 24-21 Chiefs. I was close. My 10-year-old, who's not a Chiefs fan, said 27-24 Chiefs, and he was absolutely 100% correct. And what's funny is we're watching the game, and they're taking the kneel downs. I said, Liam, didn't you say 27-24? My oldest son says, "Hi, you did." And all of a sudden he's like, my 10-year-old, "Oh, yeah, I did." Didn't know what I was talking about. I just threw it out there. So that was pretty cool. The Bills led 17-13 at halftime. Josh Allen, a couple touchdown runs, a field goal. Harrison Butker, a couple field goals. Kelce wide open on a 22-yard pass. And then things got interesting, certainly with all the lead changes. The Bills were up going in the fourth quarter. 40 seconds in the fourth, Pacheco gives the Chiefs the lead with a four-yard touchdown run. Then the Bills attempted a fake punt on fourth down with DeMar Hamlin at their own 30. And the Chiefs only had 10 players on the field. That's part of the reason why the Bills went with that. And it did not work. Chiefs are ready for it. Very next play, Pacheco runs it all the way down to the Buffalo 3. And I'm sitting here going, hello, hello, here we go. And I saw Pacheco limp a little bit after that play. And I saw Rice in the backfield. And I saw Mecole Hardman lined up at the top. And I'm like, okay, this has got to be a fake jet sweep, handed off to Rice, Kelce, I don't know, play action. And they actually hand it off to Mecole Hardman. And then he fumbles, and he fumbles out of bounds, and they review it. And I thought right then and there, that might be what, you know, cost us. It would be appropriate the Chiefs would lose on a play like that the way the season's gone, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And why is Mecole Hardman, it's first down! Why are you trying to reach? You'd be, dear Lord, you know, is this Kadarius Toney reincarnated? I'm like sitting there, why is every damn gadget player for the Chiefs always tends to try to be a hero when they are like 5'7", 138 pounds soaking wet? You aren't going to run through these people. You're going to have to run by them. And it still drives me nuts when the Chiefs get inside the five and they run horizontal to the line of scrimmage, especially when you've got a guy named Pacheco. And by the way, Clyde's run the ball well pretty well the last few weeks too. Clyde and Pacheco are not on the field at the time. You don't think they're ready for the jet sweep? They haven't handed the ball to Rice all year long. He's never lined up in the backfield. I think the Chiefs thought that would fool the Bills. It did not. And he had already fumbled early in the game on a jet sweep. Why, with your season on the line, would you take the ball out of 10, 15, 87, or 4's hands? That's the only guy who should touch the ball. And I thought that might cost the Chiefs. But you know what? The Chiefs' defense needs to be applauded, because this, to me, was where the game was won. The Bills get the ball back. Touchback, right? And you're thinking the Chiefs could be demoralized, they can feel sorry for themselves, and I'm thinking, here we go, the Bills are going to go down and score, and this game is completely changed, and if the Chiefs lose, we're all going to scream about that stupid play call and Hardman reaching out with the ball for some dumb reason, not securing it on first down. And the Chiefs' defense saved Hardman's bacon. And I told everybody that was watching the game with me in my basement, I said, Mecole Hardman needs to buy all these guys steak dinners after the game, buy them whatever they want to drink, and then take a separate plane home. Because the defense bailed his butt out. It bailed Andy Reid's butt out, too, or Matt Nagy. But it really bailed out Mecole Hardman. That was just inexplicable, but yet we're used to it, aren't we, Chiefs fans, making those type of play calls when we get cute towards the goal line? I understand the cuteness a little bit when the Chiefs used to be able to not really run the ball or just simply didn't. And I know Pacheco is banged up on the play. You know what? Run the ball again, because you got to be thinking four downs from the three. Or at least do play action, keep it in Mahomes' hands. And if you don't get it, then guess what? Pacheco comes in after getting one play off, and you run him in. And so I thought the Chiefs should have been up 10 without question. Although, in fairness, the Bills should have never run a fake punt. And the Chiefs should have never had the ball at the three anyway. So I guess you could say it's a wash. Well, so after the wash, the Bills go three and out. And the Chiefs take over at, I think, their own 45. So basically what you gave up was 55 yards of field position, roughly. But nobody scored. Mm-hmm. So you kind of, each team dodged a bullet. The Bills dodged a bullet with, oh, dear Lord, you just gave yourselves your own nail in your coffin by doing the fake punt. Then you get a reprieve because Hardman fumbles the ball out of bounds. And so it kind of was a wash. And the Chiefs defense did their job the rest of the game. They came through when they really, really needed it. Did they get a lot of pressure on Allen? No. Secondary was magnificent. And I've got some amazing numbers to throw out at you. And, of course, we know that Bass missed a field goal at the end. Mahomes had 132 quarterback rating, okay? 132, that's pretty good. 17 of 23, 215, two touchdowns, no interceptions. Pacheco ran for 97 yards. The Chiefs ran 43 plays, if you take away the kneel downs at the end. Only ran 43 plays. 8.46 yards per play. But remember, this offense can't do anything. Remember that? Chiefs fans, you'd given up on this offense. It's the highest yards per play for any Chiefs team in the Mahomes playoff era. The offense that sucks for the Chiefs just had their best game ever in yards per play. Let that sink in. I had John text me. He goes, yeah, you might have been all over the Chiefs winning this game or whatever else, but surely you didn't count on MVS making two key catches. I will tell you this. When I talk about figuring out in the playoffs, I'm talking about the guys dropping passes. And MVS is one of them. And I was not surprised MVS made those catches yesterday. Now, did I count on MVS to make an amazing one-handed catch on the near sideline? Hell no. Nobody would. But I will tell you, I had a feeling MVS was going to make a play or two. I did. I truly did. Because he's done it in the playoffs. He has a track record of coming through in the playoffs. I think he is the perfect poster child for not focusing during the regular season and then extra hard focus during the playoffs, because then he doesn't want to let anybody down. You know what? I lost the game against the Eagles. I didn't make a catch, which wasn't easy. Okay, he had other catches that were easier than that one he didn't make, but it didn't cost him a season, you know? Whereas when the game is on the line, your season's on the line is different than the game on the line. Game on the line, regular season, guess what? You got another game to play, you're good. Playoffs, you drop a ball, it could be the end of your season. And so some players actually elevate their game and are better under more pressure, believe it or not. Like, there's some guys that are better foul shooters in the final 2 minutes of a game than guys that are 88% foul shooters. Why? I can't explain it. Some are just clutch. They want the moment. They're not afraid. They can't wait to get up there. And there's others that are great foul shooters that just don't really seem to want to be there. Okay? So MVS has come through for the Chiefs the last few years. So I'm not surprised that MVS did what he did. I really am not. But no, I would not have predicted him to make an amazing one-handed grab on the sideline. Once again, I don't think anybody would have predicted it go that far.
No.
But I thought the Chiefs were going to cut down their mistakes in the playoffs. They have. There weren't that many penalties yesterday either. Really the biggest mistake they had was Andy Reid not challenging a call early in the game, which I can't believe he didn't challenge it. But I think he didn't want a chance losing a timeout a minute and a half into the game. That cost him 3 points. And because I think it would have been overturned, but who knows. And then the Hardman fumble. Those are the two glaring mistakes that I remember from the game. Those are the two glaring mistakes. Were there other mistakes? Sure. There were other mistakes. But all in all, pretty good. You know, Stephon Diggs dropped a deep ball that was huge. That was, I mean,
oh yeah,
he turned into MVS. He didn't make that play, and he should have. The Chiefs had 8 plays of 20 yards or more. The Bills had 0. 62% of Josh Allen's completions were behind the line of scrimmage. He didn't even look to push the ball until the fourth quarter. 49% of his passing yards were on completions behind the line of scrimmage. He wasn't even throwing it down the field. The other thing that I noticed in the first half in particular, and we've talked about this, right? Get Sky Moore off the field, get Kadarius Toney off the field, get MVS off the field, go with Rice and 3 tight ends. Yesterday, the Chiefs went with more 3 tight end sets. And you know how many yards per play they averaged in the first half with 3 tight end sets? 12.
Man.
They were throwing the ball with 3 tight ends instead of running it.
Yeah.
That was effective. That's something that's different. And that's that wrinkle that Andy and the Chiefs kind of save sometimes for the playoffs.
When you have a tight end that's basically a wide receiver, and then you have another tight end that could be basically a wide receiver, and then you actually have a tight end, Blake Bell,
that blocks.
You can, like, that's, and I think we've been talking about that mid-year, right? Let's do more 3 tight end stuff if the wide receivers aren't going to catch the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's Andy Reid on the win.
All-time classic again. Every time we play one of Sean's teams, it comes right down to the end. I'm so proud of our guys and the job that they did. Just one heck of a job. You know, the sidelines were so positive, which I thought was important in this game. You knew it was going to be a tight game just because of the caliber of team they've got, and it was. And our guys just kept their composure through the highs and the lows of the game.
Patrick Mahomes on that first road playoff game and getting a W in Buffalo.
That was fun. I love Arrowhead, but it's always fun when you get to come together as a team and really just be like y'all versus everybody and get the win. So it's always great to be in great environments and find a way to get a win.
You know, here's the thing. When you get in the playoffs, there's a different energy. And you could see that. And I think it helped immensely that the Chiefs didn't have anything on the line the final regular season game, especially for a guy like Travis Kelce. He's re-energized. You can see it. You know he's been living for the playoffs. I think if there is a perfect example of a guy that gets bored with the regular season and can't wait for the playoffs, it's Travis Kelce. I think there's no question about it. I think it's like, dude, I just got to hang in there, stay healthy, let's get through the regular season because it's all about the playoffs. And I think there are guys that get bored during the regular season or they actually, Travis Kelce said it, I think, before last year's Super Bowl. They asked him about the regular season, how you have to wait so long to get back to the playoffs. And he talked about how it'd be great to just hit the fast forward button. So we know that you're not going to get up for the regular season games as much as the playoff games. And even that's going to happen more and more often if you keep going deep in the playoffs every year. Like, you're just like, dude, that's where you got to be on top of your game. So, has Kelce had his share of drops? Yeah. He was terrific yesterday. Kelce did exactly what he needed to do, and Patrick Mahomes found him, and they set a record in regards to playoff touchdowns between a receiver and a quarterback in NFL history. Here's Mahomes on that feat.
We always emphasize getting the ball to Travis, but passing anything that has Brady and Gronk in it is special because those are two of the greatest players. I mean, Tom is the greatest player and one of the greatest tight ends of all time, and so those are great and postseason players. And so to be mentioning that and passing that, you appreciate that. It speaks to Travis and his work, being able to go out there and make plays in big games. But we always emphasize getting Travis the ball. He did a great job of getting himself open, and then once they started putting a lot of attention on him, other guys like MVS made plays, and so that's what it takes. Everybody's got to make plays in order to win playoff games.
A lot of positive out yesterday. Of course, the negative was Mecole Hardman. Hardman yesterday, one carry for negative 1 yard, two fumbles, one catch for 2 yards. So I guess they called that a catch where he fumbled the first time, and then that was a run the other time. Here's Reed on the Hardman play.
Listen, he's had so many big plays for us over time, and on that play, you know. But you can't reach out. He was trying, so you give him the effort. But we know that you can't do that down there because of that reason. And so you got to protect that football, and he'll get better for that.
Chiefs lucky from that standpoint, and Hardman's very lucky to be playing another game after his issues. That was really the only big negative coming out of the game. And we talked about the remember 13 seconds when the Chiefs kicked a field goal and only had 13 seconds and the Bills mismanaged the end of that game with how they handled the kickoff and everything else and defense. And they mishandled things yesterday as well. When it was 27-24, the ghost of Chiefs wins of the past caught up to them because they were more worried about running the clock down than they were of actually scoring a touchdown. And it came back to bite the Bills big time. The Chiefs put up, this is pretty amazing stuff. This is the Chiefs offense that we're used to back in the day, aren't we? The Chiefs only had the ball for 22 minutes. They only had 43 snaps, and they still had 364 yards and 27 points. That sounds like the Mahomes offense of the old.
Mm-hmm.
The defense adjusted. They slowed down the run game. We mentioned the kicking woes for the Bills. We told you about this on Thursday, and then it came to fruition for the Bills. Here's some other amazing statistics if you're into this stuff for your stat guys out there. The Bills were the 12th team in the playoffs to have ever had at least 180 yards rushing, 180 yards passing, and no turnovers. And they're the first one to lose a game when they did that. The Bills had the ball for 37 minutes, ran 31 more plays than the Chiefs. They forced a fumble out of the end zone at the goal line, and they lost at home in the playoffs at the hands of Mahomes. Again, coming into the game, if Josh Allen didn't turn the ball over, the Bills had never lost. Last night, Allen did not turn the ball over. Bills are now 17-1. And I thought there were times the Bills, I think Allen was making sure he wouldn't have a turnover. The Chiefs are the first team in NFL history to win at least two playoff games in five straight seasons. 13 playoff wins for Patrick Mahomes. He's 28. The most playoff wins of any quarterback before turning 30. He has 13 playoff wins before the age of 30. He's only 28. No one's ever done that before. He's undefeated in the divisional and wildcard round six starting seasons. His 6 years as a starter. Six straight AFC championship appearances. Mahomes has never been bounced before the AFC title game. He had the highest wide receiver drop rate in the National Football League since the 0-16 Cleveland Browns, and the Chiefs are in the AFC title game still. Mahomes, I gave you the trade deadlines. The Bills allowed the Chiefs to trade up, get the Bills pick, and take Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes has more playoff wins, 13, than 12 NFL franchises in their franchise history. That's almost half the league.
Yes.
And remember, you few people out there that were saying we should not get rid of Alex Smith. I remember you people. I do. Because the writing was on the wall. I was telling you, you could play back the tape. I don't know if the Mahomes experiment's going to work. I had faith in it more so than most because I thought Andy Reid does great job with quarterbacks. And I thought it was going to work. Did I think it was going to be this successful? Of course not. Nobody did. Nobody saw this coming. A lot of people wanted Deshaun Watson instead of Patrick Mahomes. But there was no doubt, and you and I remember sitting in this studio, talked about how it was a no-brainer that you hand the keys to Mahomes because you had gone as far as you can in the playoffs with Alex Smith. Don't care if he's the number one rated quarterback in the regular season. In the playoffs, he scored 0 points in the second half against the Tennessee Titans. He had a game where he scored 16 and couldn't beat a team that had six field goals. And that ain't all on Alex Smith, but that's just what Alex Smith was. A solid, good quarterback, much like Trent Green, that was not going to get you to the Super Bowl, was not going to win a Super Bowl. You had to have a dominant, great defense, probably, to win a Super Bowl with Alex Smith. So we said, listen, if you're satisfied with winning 10, 11 games, winning division here and there, and getting to the divisional round of the playoffs and losing, then you should not go to Mahomes. I remember we had this conversation. But if you are dreaming about winning a Super Bowl, if you believe that the Chiefs can win a Super Bowl, or you want to win a Super Bowl, and you're not satisfied with losing in the playoffs every year with Alex Smith, then you have to give the keys to Mahomes. And he may go 6-10 his first season, and there may be growing pains, and he throws 20 interceptions. But long term, this is the move you have to make. And all he did was go out and throw for 5,000 yards, 50 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. And if he didn't have a god-awful defense with a horrible defensive coordinator and Bob Sutton, he would have went to the Super Bowl his first year as a starter, and maybe he would have another ring right now. So the Chiefs basically pulled a fast one on the entire league in that draft when they traded up 17 spots to get a quarterback that everybody thought was Deshaun Watson. And that was part of it, too. Everybody's shocked. Oh, my God. Of all the quarterbacks we're taking, it's great we're taking a quarterback, but that one, that's the wrong one. Well, safe to say it was the right decision, and thank God the fan base once again was not in charge.
Absolutely. And I'll go to my grave being the first guy to say I wanted Deshaun Watson at that pick. I wanted Deshaun Watson in that draft, no matter where they were going to pick him. And so, you know, I the thing that bothers me, I think, the most about it is like a revisionist history of everybody like, oh, yeah, we knew he was the right guy.
No, they didn't.
Half the people wanted Mahomes, and maybe not even half. I bet more than half wanted Watson over Mahomes when they traded up for that pick as Chiefs fans.
And there's some that wanted to keep Alex Smith as starting quarterback.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, nobody expected this. Like, no. if you are claiming you expected this, then go win the lottery.
Well, if that's the case, you can predict a lot of things, and you can't be having a real job. You should be retired
exactly.
On the beach sipping Mai Tais and margaritas.
Yeah, you should have been in Vegas gambling and winning all this money and right. Be rich now.
If you knew this,
nobody knew this was coming. No. So,
not even Andy Reid.
No, and so it's wild to see it.
It's
happened with one of your, I've seen it with my NBA team, but I'm not as close of a fan mm-hmm. as I am with the Chiefs and Royals and these local ones, right? And it is wild to see this from a quarterback and have this many wins before 30, which, like you said, he's 28, can still add more to that before 30.
Yeah.
Has a chance to add two more this year, and who knows? Three, four more next year. Who knows how that goes? But, and to be ahead of 12 franchises with playoffs, it's insane, and I could have never dreamed anything like this in my entire life.
Don't you? I don't know about you, and I don't know about other Chiefs fans, and I've been trying to tell Chiefs fans here for the last few years, we really need to step back and quit getting all stuck up in the negativity and acting like spoiled brats and understand what we are watching here. We may be watching the greatest quarterback that's ever lived, and he's in his prime. We may be watching the best dynasty that's ever been, although, you know, that you got ways to go there. Although the Patriots went, what, a long time between Super Bowls there. After they won 3 and 4 years and 2 in a row, they went, what was it, 15 or 10 years without winning one. The Chiefs are in the midst of a stretch that we really haven't seen in the history of the National Football League, or very few times. And who knows what they're going to do the next few years. They're 2 wins away from winning back-to-back, which cements the dynasty without question. Mm-hmm. And many people would say they already have it. And you win 5 straight AFC, or you go to 5 straight AFC title games, and then you can win a 6th when you got to go on the road and knock off the top 2 seeds. And you do it with receivers that had the highest drop rate of any NFL team since a 0-16 squad. And you sit here and you, I don't know about you, but I absolutely have to pinch myself. Because for you Chiefs fans that are younger out there that don't know what the Chiefs were before Patrick Mahomes, you're very fortunate. You're more spoiled than anybody on earth. Because the Kansas City Chiefs had so much disappointment in the playoffs so many times. And we went through this before on the show. But the Chiefs went so many years without ever drafting a quarterback. They kept getting retread older veteran quarterbacks, usually from the San Francisco 49ers. The only guy that really worked out was Joe Montana for a short period of time. And guess where he lost in the AFC title game? Buffalo. So what we are witnessing here is, listen, we said this a few years ago. Patrick Mahomes is the Michael Jordan of the National Football League. He's the LeBron James of the National Football League. You know, LeBron James, you can pretty much bet that, and LeBron's been in the league now for almost 20 years, but you knew in LeBron's time, in his prime, he was always making the NBA Finals or making, he was never going to get bounced in the divisional round. He was never going to get bounced before the conference finals. It was automatic. And that's what it is now with the Kansas City Chiefs. Well, think about all the issues the Chiefs have had to overcome during some of these years. As I already mentioned, the defense is horrible, and then they figure it out. Special teams is horrible, and they figure it out. He don't have any wide. Oh, he don't have Tyreek Hill. How the hell is he going to survive? Hey, guess what? They win a Super Bowl without Tyreek Hill right away. Oh my God, we don't have a number one wide receiver. What are we going to do? Kelsey's aging, and Rashee Rice is a nice player, and Sky Moore is a bust, and Kadarius Toney's horrible, and Hardman. What are we doing getting him? And all he does is he's in the AFC title game again. Imagine what could happen if the Chiefs signed like a Mike Evans this offseason or DeAndre Hopkins came over. I mean, imagine if they gave him a tall wide receiver that did catch the ball most of the time, unlike MVS. I mean, he has a tall receiver. MVS is a tall receiver. I mean, imagine, right? So I've said this for a while. Imagine if the Chiefs got a really good defense with Patrick Mahomes. Well, they have a really good defense with Patrick Mahomes. So it's no surprise to me. I'm not surprised at all they won. I'm not surprised at all that they're in the AFC title game at all. The next question is going to be, are they good enough to beat the Baltimore Ravens in Baltimore? Because the Ravens defense is the best defense in the league. They have weapons and a quarterback that I honestly think is more dynamic than Josh Allen. I'm still not convinced Lamar's unbelievably great passer. He is a good passer. Don't get me wrong. He's a very good passer. And they addressed things in the offseason. They got wide receivers. Mm-hmm. They drafted Zay Flowers. They picked up OBJ. Bateman has improved. Andrews is now back at tight end. They got another tight end likely. They got weapons, and they can run the ball. The Ravens will be, honestly, in my opinion, the best team they've played in the AFC title game during this run. The Patriots were not all that in 2000. I mean, they didn't have home field advantage.
Proved that in the Super Bowl.
In the Super Bowl, they barely won over the Rams. So the Patriots were not all that. That was the end of the Patriots' run. They were very fortunate that Dee Ford's was offsides to negate an interception, or they wouldn't even made it. And they gave up a ton of points in the second half to Mahomes and the Chiefs. The Patriots, that was not a great Patriot team. But they won. Kind of like the Chiefs weren't great last year, but they, you know, they were good. And they won one when maybe they shouldn't have, and they lost one that they probably should have won had they not had injuries possibly against Tampa Bay. It happens. Brady won some years when he shouldn't have. Some years he didn't win when he should have when he was 18-0. That's just the law of averages. But the Patriots were not a juggernaut at that time. The Chiefs, obviously, when they win the AFC title games, I don't think those are the Titans had Derrick Henry, but what else did they have, right? In the AFC title game. The Bengals, they played twice, and they should have won the first one, and they didn't. They were dominating the first half, and that Bengal team was an up-and-comer. The Bengals were a very good team last year, a tough team, but that was at Arrowhead, okay? And who am I leaving out on the AFC title game situation? Did I leave them out? Tennessee.
I'm going to try to go in order in my head.
Well, the Chiefs. The Chiefs had was that the AFC title game the first time they played the Bills? Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
Yeah,
The Bills were not quite there yet.
Yeah.
So, and those are all at home. So this is the biggest challenge. You know, people are talking about, well, this is the biggest challenge of Patrick Mahomes' career going on the road in Buffalo. No, it's not. It's not. It's not. The biggest challenge for Patrick Mahomes during his run at quarterback with the Kansas City Chiefs, his biggest challenge is this Sunday. This is his biggest challenge of his career. It's way more challenging than the Buffalo. The Bills are missing half their defensive starters. I'm not trying to, undercut what the Chiefs accomplished. The Chiefs also faced the Dolphins without their two best pass rushers. Mm-hmm. And they also was negative 30 wind chill, and the Dolphins don't like that type of weather. The Chiefs have, and honestly, you need a little bit of luck along the way. You always do, right? The Chiefs did not have luck when they lost their starting tackles and they played the Buccaneers. And how many drops were in that game, too? And balls that Mahomes throwing off his receivers, running back's face mask, they can't catch the ball. They didn't have luck that day. They didn't have luck when they lost the AFC title game to the Bengals with that play before halftime. They did have some luck last year when Moore returns a punt and then there's the push out of bounds to get him in field goal range. Okay, they caught a few breaks there. This year they caught a huge break that they played the Dolphins right off the bat, who's so banged up, and then the weather was perfect for them. It was a great matchup for the Chiefs. We said it going in. Then you go to Buffalo and you play a team that is just absolutely ravaged by injuries on the defensive side of the ball, and you're playing a team that has all the pressure in the world to win. They're playing without one of their best wide receivers as well, and the Chiefs, go in relatively healthy, and that was a good setup for the Chiefs. That's why I like their chances to win. This one is different. This is not at Arrowhead in AFC title game. This is against a team that has an outstanding defense and a really good offense. It's not like the Ravens only do one thing well. Mm-hmm. They have destroyed some of the best teams in the National Football League this year. Do I think the Chiefs can beat the Ravens? Hell yeah, I think the Chiefs can beat the Ravens. They can beat anybody as long as they quit beating themselves. But the Chiefs played against the Dolphin team that was decimated by injuries on defense. They played a Bills team decimated by injuries on defense without a top wide receiver. Now they play the Ravens, and the Ravens, for once, are not decimated by tons of injuries. And for once, the Ravens have legitimate wide receivers that Lamar Jackson can throw to. You can look back. The Chiefs have usually had the Ravens' number. The last time the Chiefs played in Baltimore, they blew the game. They shot themselves in the foot. They were controlling the game, dominating the game. Mahomes threw a boneheaded interception. His words, not mine, after the game. Clyde Edwards-Helaire fumbled when the Chiefs were going to win the game. So the Chiefs outplayed them that time. They usually, for some reason, do well against the Ravens. But I will say, this Ravens team is a different type of team. They do have weapons at wide receiver that those years the Chiefs beat them, they did not. They have one of the top tight ends in football who wasn't maybe quite there last time that they played them. They still got a really good running game. They are a physical football team. And I think Lamar Jackson is a better quarterback than he was the last time the Chiefs played him. And part of that is he has more weapons. And they have an outstanding coaching staff. And then on top of that, they're going to be hosting their first AFC title game in franchise history as the Baltimore Ravens, okay? So this is going to be a game that if Mahomes and the Chiefs lose, you're not going to... I mean, Chiefs fans, you shouldn't hang your head and go, oh, no, the dynasty's over. No. You reloaded. You don't have really any great wide receivers for most of the season. You still made an AFC title game with all the issues that you had. Now in the offseason, you address a few of those issues. You could be right back where you're supposed to be next year. Maybe be favored to win the AFC. You lose to the Ravens. Hey, the Ravens were the best team all year long. So be it. But it's hard to believe I'm going to say this. A man that has been to the Super Bowl 3 times in 5 years as a starter, he's been to 5 straight, now 6 straight AFC title games, has 13 playoff wins, more than 12 NFL franchises in their team's history. Patrick Mahomes has a chance to add a tremendous feather to his legacy this Sunday. he has a chance to go in and play a team that is a 3 to 3.5 point favorite, that has been the best team all year long, that is complete, unlike the Bills and Dolphins. He's got to win two road games, not one, back-to-back weeks against the two best teams in the AFC based on seed, just to get to the Super Bowl. You thought his first road playoff win was legacy-making, beating Josh Allen head-to-head? What do you think a win against Lamar Jackson in Baltimore will do?
It vaults it way past anything that you'd have expected with this guy.
And then, if you do that, now you're one win away from winning your third Super Bowl before you turn 29. So it is pretty incredible what we are seeing as Chiefs fans. It's pretty incredible what the NFL fans are seeing when they watch Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. Mahomes is the face of the league. Can he win it by himself? No. When he gets, you know, when he has tackles that are hurt in a Super Bowl, running for his life, guys not catching passes, we know he can't do it all by himself. But what we do know is Andy Reid could never win a Super Bowl until he had 15 as his quarterback. We know the Chiefs couldn't win a Super Bowl after the Lynn Dawson days until they got Patrick Mahomes at quarterback. He is the guy you build around. And so while everybody freaked out about Tyreek Hill being traded, or, oh my gosh, we might not get Chris Jones signed, I remember before week one, do you need Chris Jones to make the Super Bowl? Yes. But can you win a lot of games and still make the playoffs without him? Of course, because you have what? 15. Chris Jones didn't do a lot yesterday. Okay? He didn't get a sack. Nearly didn't come close to getting a sack. But he did get a little bit of pressure on a throw that I think Allen could have completed for a touchdown there in the fourth quarter. And, you know, that's the difference between winning and losing. The margin of error is slim. And listen, if Tyler Bass makes that field goal, I think the Chiefs go down and win it. But maybe they don't. Maybe it goes to overtime. Maybe a receiver drops the ball off his hands, pops in the air, return for six. We'll never know. But the Chiefs, when they get into the postseason, more often than not, they make the play or plays they need to make. And what's amazing to me is the Chiefs usually overcome some god-awful play. And yesterday, they overcame a god-awful play with Mecole Hardman. A god-awful play call, a god-awful play, and they still won against the supposed on the same level as Mahomes, Josh Allen, who didn't even hardly complete anything past the line of scrimmage yesterday. So please stop with the Josh Allen talk. He seems like a super great dude. Please stop with the Bengals and Joe Burrow has this record against Mahomes and he has this record against Allen and Mahomes. Yeah, how many rings does he count on his fingers? And the answer is one, college. He don't have no pro. So stop it. Mahomes is the best quarterback in this league. And there's four quarterbacks left. Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Jared Goff, and Brock Purdy. Who are you putting your money on?
Historically, that's a pretty easy answer to put your money on Mahomes.
So, do the Baltimore Ravens have the better, more complete team than the Chiefs? I believe they do.
For sure.
But I also believe that the Chiefs have the guy that can overcome that. Yeah. And why would I not believe that? And if you're a Chiefs fan, going into this Baltimore game already saying that we're going to lose, you are just, you must be the most negative person that have ever lived this face of the earth. And must just crap on everything that's positive in the world. Because if you already are putting down the Chiefs after beating the Bills and saying, well, that was great, but you ain't going to beat the Ravens. And I'm talking as you are a Chiefs fan. There's national people that think that, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But if you're a Chiefs fan and you are sourpuss and you're sitting here saying, well, the Chiefs can't beat the Ravens, you're a fool. Okay? Now, you might be right that they may lose to the Ravens. That is possible. But if you think they have no chance of beating the Ravens, you're a fool. You're an absolute downright fool because there is nothing that tells you that they can't win this game. There should be nothing that tells you they can't win this game. The only way they can't win this game, in my opinion, is Mahomes gets knocked out and can't play in this game. That's the only way they can't win.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't think Blaine Gabbert's going to lead them to victory against Baltimore. Who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. But we've got to understand what we're watching. And the other thing, too, is now you're going to play the Ravens. Joe Tooney, pectoral, he might be done. Allegretti stepped in, did a nice job. He's a good backup. Mike Edwards, concussion. Will he be ready to go? They're already thin at safety. Willie Gay, a neck injury. That's concerning because against the Ravens, you're going to need all hands on deck. There's no doubt about that. And the Ravens looked great in the second half against the Texans, 34-10. Their defense played great. Lamar played really well. AFC title game is this Sunday at 2 o'clock in Baltimore. Baltimore is the favorite, and I love the fact that the Chiefs are an underdog. I love the fact that the Chiefs have a chip on their shoulder because they haven't been able to play that card for quite some time.
Yeah, one of the things I think about with this team, and I was getting messages from people yesterday, so I'm so nervous. One of the things about when I'm watching the Chiefs, I don't get nervous anymore.
Why do you get nervous with 15 at quarterback?
It's like, and I think, you know, some of that might have other motivation to it, as far as, you know, some wagering on an app or something like that. I don't know that for sure, but one of the things I've learned with this team. And it's not foolproof. It's not a fail-safe. Like, they make mistakes. They lose games that you think they may win, right? But one of the things you can do with this team is when you stack these moments, these wins, these situations on top of each other, more often than not, when you put the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes in a situation where whether we feel like their backs are against the wall or if in their mind it's a perceived thing that their backs are against the wall, more often than not, they're coming out on the other side of that thing in yes. front and in the lead. And that's why I felt like I did about that Bengals game in the regular season, right? The team is this close to having one or two things go wrong, and they're not even going to win this division.
Yeah.
And so it's in their mind, right? And mm-hmm. I never
sense
called
of urgency.
I didn't call that a must win, but the situation was urgent for yes. them to go ahead and wrap this up. Hey, we wrap this up this week, we get a rest next
That's
week.
That's right.
And so their laser focus, I think, in that Cincinnati game was there, and that's what I expected in that game. Mm-hmm. I think we're both going to end up being right about that conversation we had that mm-hmm. day, right? You were confident that they could do things in the playoffs, mm-hmm. and I was still a little sketchy because they're making mistakes. I was confident they were going to win that day and rise above because they knew their backs were against the wall
right.
in their mind. They mm-hmm. weren't, you know, there was still a chance they were going to win the division. It didn't matter anyway. But in their mind, they said, hey, we can wrap this up right now today. And they went out and executed it and did the things that they needed to do to wrap it up that day. And so, like I said, there's situations where they're not going to come out in front of it, and we've seen that with the Bengals. We've seen that with the Super Bowl, with the injuries at line on the offensive line, and basically getting blown out by the Buccaneers. But when you're stacking all these things up and continue to do it like you do it, whether it's a defense, you don't have Tyreek Hill, you have different guys doing different things, but the two constants are 15 and Andy Reid on the sidelines, then you feel there's not a chance in hell anybody should think that the Chiefs don't have a chance in any game.
Exactly.
Like, you go into every game with an absolute chance to win and an expectation to win.
Yes.
And that's going to be the same in Baltimore this week. You go into that game with obviously a chance to win, but an expectation to win because of who you are and what you do at this time of year. Mm-hmm. I'm not dove into it. We'll find out what I'm going to feel by the end of the week. But it's like in your mind, it's like, no, you don't count the team out. And I never count the team out. Most of my predictions are going to be gut feelings about where I feel this team is at that moment. Mm-hmm. And listen, when they prove me wrong, they prove me wrong. And when I really felt like they were going to need a turnover yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't get it. They had the opportunities, like you said. But they're just not creating turnovers, and that was a concern going into it for me. Mm-hmm. Didn't matter in the end. Missed field goal, and here you go to the AFC Championship.
I think, listen, the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes remind me of so many teams of the past. Like, when it was Brady and the Patriots, if you were playing against Brady and the Patriots and it was close in the fourth quarter, you didn't like your chances, did you?
No.
You just knew that they'd find a way to beat you. And you felt the same way about Joe Montana and the Niners or John Elway and the Broncos. That's how everybody in this league feels about Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. I mean, Mahomes not perfect. He doesn't win every single game, and he doesn't come back from every single deficit. But you know that if it's tight and at the end of the game, Mahomes has the ball, you are absolutely sweating bullets as the opposition because you are just waiting for the bad thing to happen, and that is the Chiefs to beat you, and 15 is going to beat you. And honestly, that is a big reason why the Bills lost yesterday at the end of the game, is because they thought the exact same thing. They were so worried about Patrick Mahomes getting the ball and beating them, no matter how much time was remaining, instead of focusing on actually taking the lead. That's how far Mahomes and the Chiefs are in the heads of their opposition.
Oh, yeah.
In particular, the Buffalo
And the greats are all like that, right?
That's right.
Like you,
yeah.
How many times, I'm sure the Pacers thought they were going to beat the Bulls in 98.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Like it's,
yeah.
We got this on the, it's on a wrap right yeah. now.
Or how many times the Bulls lose a game at home and turn around, got it right back on the road
yeah.
and get the home field back. And LeBron's done that. Jordan did that. The greats do that. The Warriors have done that. It's like
3-1 lead for the Warriors yeah. over the Cavs, and you
LeBron
feel like you're there
back.
And then somebody does something special,
mm-hmm.
right? And obviously Kyrie had a lot to do with that, but yeah. it's like the greats do that,
yes,
right?
They do, absolutely,
and they're in your heads, and you do the long run of KU men's basketball championships, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like in the conference, they're in your head, like
yes.
you're this close to doing it,
mm-hmm.
and then you just make one slip up, and boom, you're buried, and you're. It's going to haunt you for another 5 years after that.
How many times you watch an NBA game where the Bulls had the ball and down one, or the Bulls have a chance to win, or the Lakers had a chance to win, and you knew Jordan's getting the ball, you knew Kobe was getting the ball, and you still couldn't stop it. And you just knew it was coming, and you prayed that somehow he'd missed a shot, and it seemed like they always made it. Now, they didn't, but it seemed like they always made it, you know? I remember the Lakers-Celtics in Game 7 L.A. The Celtics were up double digits, and I never felt safe about that game. I was cheering for the Celtics, and Kobe and the Lakers just willed their way back, and then Kobe took over. Because when it comes down to crunch time, clutch time, closing time, the greats, more often than not, get it done. Are they perfect? Do they win it all the time? No. But you are in such fear. And that's how I felt when the Chiefs played the Broncos in Elway. The Chiefs could play well for 59 mm-hmm. minutes and own the game. And yet, if it was a 7-point game or less, I knew Elway was going to screw us over. And now, Bronco fans and everybody else in the league feel that way about my team. For once, my team is the one that gives you the problems. And it is glorious. It is glorious. And the run that Mahomes is having is better than anything Joe Montana ever did. It's better than anything John Elway did. It's better than any quarterback's ever done except for Tom Brady.
Yeah.
And honestly, if you squeeze in the 5-year thing, and Nick Wright has done this. Nick Wright is a big Chiefs fan, as you probably know. But they put together the graphic, and they put the graphic up with the Chiefs winning the Super Bowl this year. The best 5-year run that the Patriots had and the Chiefs' 5-year run now is identical.
Mm-hmm.
It's just as good. Actually, it's technically slightly better. That's what the Chiefs are going for here. This is history. This is to cement the dynasty. And obviously, if they beat the Ravens, I think the Chiefs will be the favorite in the Super Bowl. Even though people, if they play the Niners, everybody will be like, well, the Niners are so great all year long. Yeah, but you're going to take Brock Purdy over Patrick Mahomes? Come on. The Chiefs are probably going to be favored against the Niners. I think the AFC champion will be favored no matter what. The Ravens smoked the Niners. And wouldn't it be something, I said this last week, wouldn't it be something if we had a bookend to the season? I said it last week. Wouldn't it be something? Is the first game of the year on a Thursday night, the Lions beat the Chiefs 21-20. No Chris Jones. He was in a suite watching the game, holding out. Travis Kelce is out with an injury. And if it wasn't for Kadarius Toney not catching a ball right in his hands, popped up, returned for 6 points, the Chiefs probably win the game and didn't even play that well that night. The Lions, that kind of spearheaded their whole season, okay? That was a huge win for the Lions to get them going. And you could see the Lions and the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, and the Chiefs, do you think the Chiefs are going to lose the Lions twice in the season? I don't think so. So if you sit here, if the Chiefs can get by the Ravens, and then they play the Lions, and I know this is going to sound disrespectful because the Lions have played great ball, and I love the Lions, and it's going to be tough because I really am pulling for the Lions. I love Dan Campbell and everything they're doing in Detroit. But are you going to take Mahomes or Goff in the Super Bowl? Are you going to take a team that already beat the Chiefs by one without Chris Jones and Travis Kelce? Everybody's going to pick the Chiefs to win, which makes that a little bit scary. But I've said this over and over. When you're picking an NFL game in the playoffs, you really just can simplify it. Who has the advantage at quarterback? And if there is a clear-cut advantage at quarterback, that's the team you should pick. And then if you think it's even, then you got to go to who has the better offensive weapons, who has the better defense, who has the better coaches. That was another reason why I had the Chiefs winning against Buffalo, because I think Mahomes is better than Josh Allen. Okay? I just do. I think Josh Allen's a great player. You know, I think Mahomes is still better than Lamar Jackson. Right now, I'm sliding with the Chiefs to win. I may change. We'll see at the end of the week. You put Mahomes against Purdy or against Goff? Hell yeah, I'm taking Mahomes. So, you know, I think there are Chiefs fans that may think this, and it might be premature. You beat the Ravens. You should have the dynasty, right? Because you're going to play against either Brock Purdy or Jared Goff in the Super Bowl. a seventh round Mr. Irrelevant beating a first round pick in the Super Bowl doesn't seem very reasonable, but there was a sixth round pick, Mr. Tom Brady, that beat lots of first round quarterbacks. That's true, although I don't think Brock Purdy is Tom Brady. And the Niners have tons of weapons, this and that. But it would be something if the Lions and the Chiefs put a book into this whole thing. That would be crazy. Now, what's going to happen is it's going to be Ravens and Niners because that's not what I want. But it's also the colors of the logo. Everybody's all stuck on that. Have you noticed that? The colors of the logo, last, this would be third year in a row you'd have the exact colors if it's the Niners and the Ravens in the Super Bowl. My oldest believes in this.
Aaron Rodgers, I think, started that the other, like, a couple weeks back. And like,
no, that was longer than that. Was it early in the season.
It
was
CBS Sports. Something about it.
No, no. CBSSports.com had it, like, midway through the season. Yeah. It was when the Ravens got off to a good start. When the Ravens and the Niners were the best teams at AFC NFC, they did the story on it.
Yeah.
It was before they played in this regular season. They showed the logos and said, okay, is this scripted? You know, such and such and such and such. So, anyway, the NFC game, as we talked about, the 49ers move on. They beat the Packers. They got lucky, and it helps to be lucky because the Packers missed a 41-yard field goal, gave them a little bit of new life. They win. The Lions win over the Buccaneers. I thought Baker played tremendous yesterday for the Buccaneers, except for that last throw. That was his big mistake. But why did Tampa Bay not call a timeout with one left? And why did the Lions snap the ball so prematurely on the final play? Because you could have made the Lions kick a long field goal, and they miss it. You have 30-some seconds left. And after the game, Todd Bowles said, well, we're just delaying an inevitable. They're going to kick a field goal. The game had already been decided. I'm like, this is your season on the line. Shouldn't you, even if it takes a miracle to win, you technically still had a 0.1% chance to win. Don't you exhaust all of your chances when your season's on the line?
I would.
I think you owe it to your players, yeah. Don't you? I couldn't believe that, but I think it wouldn't have mattered. I agree with him, but you would at least have a chance.
Yeah, you're probably not wrong in the end, but you take every measure you can to win.
I mean, I'm using all my timeouts, yeah. That's for sure. Okay, in college basketball, this was an absolute stunner.
Get it into Harris. He'll throw up a desperation heave that misses, and that's the ball game. And as the court is stormed here in Morgantown, a court storming for the second time in the last 2.5 weeks at KU's expense. Jayhawks, they lose this one 91-85. And right now the Jayhawks just 1-2 on the road in league play.
A big win for Osborne, Kansas native Josh Eilert. His West Virginia men's basketball team on Saturday as the Mountaineers won over number 3 Kansas in Morgantown. The game, first half, nobody played defense. It was 51-all at halftime. KU got 24 from Kevin McCullough. Dickinson with 19. So I'm calling the games at Colby, and I get a notification on my phone. Brian Heaney, we had on Thursday, he thought KU went by double digits. Mm-hmm. Nobody, you know, once again, I love it when it is, this is what's great about sports, when nobody gives you a chance, that's when you're dangerous. Nobody gave West Virginia a chance in this game, and why would you? They're 6-11 coming in. They had just been stomped by Oklahoma, although they do play better at home. They had beaten Texas recently, although Texas isn't that as good as their ranking was. I didn't think KU would have – I thought it might be a game for a while, but I thought KU would win. I thought it might be harder than people thought, but I definitely thought KU was going to win by probably 10. And – I get this notification that KU's down 2 with 6 minutes to go. I'm like, ho, 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 whoa. Could Josh Eilert in West Virginia actually beat Bill Self with a 6-11 record? And I got to thinking, once it became final, is this the worst loss that Bill Self's ever had as a head coach of Kansas in conference play? And the answer, I think, is no, but it's close. There was one year, and I think that might have been the YMCA comment.
The Topeka YMCA, yes. Could have beat us today.
I think they went to TCU, and TCU was really –
It was at TCU.
They played poorly. They got beat, and they lost. And TCU was not good at the time. I think that was before Jamie Dixon
was
there.
It was, yeah.
And so he had the Topeka YMCA comment, and they played god-awful, and TCU was not good at the time. Now, TCU is very good now, but they were not at the time. I don't know what the record was. I think that was later in the conference season. It wasn't as early as this what game was. But that's the only game I can think of in Bill Self's tenure at the University of Kansas where he's lost to a team that wasn't that good record-wise in conference.
Mm-hmm.
I was shocked, and I'm rarely shocked. I was shocked that West Virginia, the way they won the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I figured if they were going to win the game, KU was going to struggle shooting, and they'd have to win a game like 64-60, kind of ugly.
Mm-hmm.
It was 51-51 at halftime. I mean, Kansas was playing great offense. Both teams weren't good defensively. But here's the thing that really stood out, and Josh Eilert talked about it after the game in his press conference. He said, we got a rebound. And if we don't rebound, you can go ahead and light this game plan on fire because it ain't going to matter.
Yeah.
And they went out and out-rebounded Kansas by 9, and Kansas has a good rebounding team. They have a 7'2" center, Hunter Dickinson. And honestly, West Virginia outworked Kansas. They were more physical in Kansas, and they flat-out got it done. So Josh Eilert's message came through with flying colors. But it's got to be one of the worst losses Bill Self has had as a head coach. And whether Josh Eilert keeps the job, he's the interim head coach at West Virginia, whether he keeps the job after the season, which I would say the betting people would say he's not going to. But if he were, or if he isn't, you can't take away that he beat Bill Self head-to-head.
Exactly.
How many guys in the world can say, hey, I end up beating Bill Self head-to-head? Not many.
No.
So no matter what happens to Josh Eilert the rest of his coaching career, which could be unbelievable or not so great, don't know. Hypotheticals, can't predict the future. You can't take it away what he just accomplished. With a 6-11 team, here is Josh Eilert on the win over KU and then what he thought about when the fans stormed the court.
Great day to be a Mountaineer. That one felt good. That's what our guys needed, you know, for that, you know, confidence to start snowballing in the right direction. It's one thing to get a top 25 win in Texas. It's another thing to you know, beat a Hall of Fame coach and top 5 program at home. So hopefully that goes a long ways to our confidence in terms of moving forward and continuing the grind through the Big 12s, because it really is a grind. You know, I grew up in Kansas, and I was a Kansas State grad, and I have a huge Catholic family, and 95% of people in my family go to Kansas State. So I've watched Big 8 basketball to Big 12 basketball, and KU's always been a dominant program. And I always respected that the year in, year out, that they were winning big. So I think the first thing that came to mind is it's – you know, I think about my dad. You know, my dad was a K-State grad, and he didn't have much of a love affair for Kansas by any means. And I lost him 6.5 years ago, and I started thinking about him, to be honest with you. You know, how proud he'd have been. So I didn't think a lot about what the students were doing. I have a lot of respect for Coach Self, a Hall of Fame coach, and their entire staff and their program and what they've done over the years and been able to accomplish over the years consistently, year in and year out. For me, you know, that was the first thought that went through my head. It's probably still hasn't sank in yet.
You know, it's interesting to me. I met Josh when he was up in Seneca. He's working at a bank up there. And I played some pickup ball against him. And I don't know Josh super well, but I certainly know him. And gotten to know him even better by having him on the show multiple times since he went to West Virginia after he was at K-State. It is pretty amazing where he is right now.
Mm-hmm.
It is pretty amazing. And, you know, small town Kansas kid, rural area, getting this opportunity and then beating Kansas, growing up hating Kansas. He didn't say hate, but you trust me, there was a hatred there, okay? Most of his family is all K-State, if not all. He mentioned his dad. It is really terrific win for him, and he'll never forget it. And it's great for the fan base, no doubt. And it's great for him with all the things that they've had to overcome this season and for their players as well. You'll never be able to take it away from him. On the Kansas side, Bill Self on the loss.
Yeah, we lost the game in the first half. We played so good offensively, and, you know, it's a tie game at halftime because we didn't give great effort defending at all. So at this point, it's, you know, my fault. We didn't have them ready to play. That's about the least turned up we've been defensively that I can remember in a long time.
Okay, so what about Kansas? What are we thinking about KU right now? They're 3-2 in the conference. They've lost at two places you expect to have the easiest wins, at Central Florida and at West Virginia. Now, at the end of the year, we might find out that, you know what? Central Florida is a tough place to play. West Virginia, they got most of their wins at home. And every game is a tough game in this conference, with the even with the additions of Central Florida and Houston and so forth, BYU and Cincinnati. KU turns around, they play tonight against Cincinnati, and Cincinnati so far this year has played pretty well in Big 12 play. So they just got beat barely by number 15 Oklahoma, and they'll be their first trip to Allen Fieldhouse. And KU rarely is going to lose back-to-back games in the Big 12, especially they hardly lose ever at home. 7:30 pregame, 8 o'clock tip-off tonight on Z96.3 The Lake. But you look at, you know, Kansas' next road games at Iowa State. If they can't win at Central Florida and West Virginia, why are they going to win in Ames?
Mm-hmm.
So that has to be concerning, no doubt, for Kansas. Now, they did win at Stillwater, although Oklahoma State still hasn't won a game in conference play. But KU's 15-3 overall, 3-2 in the Big 12. You know, KU fans will point to Marco Jackson ripping the ball away. You know, when I first saw it, I thought it was clean. You slow it down, it might have been a foul. Bill was pretty animated at the time. Bill Self was asked about that call after the game. He said, listen, that's not where the game was lost. And he answered the way I was thinking. You should never be in that situation. You're the number three team in the country going against a 6-11 team. I don't care where the game's played.
Mm-hmm.
You should not be sitting here expecting to get bailed out by an official on a call, whether it's right or wrong, under a minute to play when you were a heavy favorite. That's not the reason KU lost because of that call. KU lost because they got punked on the boards. They weren't physical enough, and as Bill Self said after the game, we were atrocious defensively. Yeah, you give up 91 to a West Virginia team that's not as talented as other teams in the conference. Now, what does this do for West Virginia? Does this suddenly, boom, prop them up and they go on a nice run? Or is this the highlight of the season by far? I don't know. We'll find out. Odds are they're going to struggle because guess where they're going? Orlando, Central Florida. They play, travel out today. They play tomorrow. I think most people would say they're probably going to lose that game just mm-hmm. because, you know, the highs of winning. And in Kansas, you expect them to bounce back tonight. But Kansas does not have much room for error the way they are constructed right now.
No. And
by the way, Furphy and Timberlake made shots, and they still lost.
Yeah. And your bulkier scoring is still coming from two, yes. three guys, KJ Adams, every other game. You know, he's doing that too, getting 18 or whatever.
But Dickinson, McCuller.
Harris still hasn't become the guy that's getting volume scoring for this team.
And I don't think he ever will.
I don't think he will either. I think he is what he is at this point.
He'll have games.
Yeah, he'll get a game where, yeah, he gets a big one. But I think this team is kind of – it's what we thought it was, you know, and they've got guys that are obviously developing and hitting shots now, but they still don't have a lot of different guys you can rely on every single game to go out and get a lot of points for you other than McCuller and Dickinson, who they've been relying on all year. And you get this sport right now has so much parity, and it's starting to bleed into conference too. You know, it's like you always saw it. You started to see it at the top of the list where, you know, the top 10 teams are jockeying and who's really number one and things like that. But this conference is way better than I think people might have even thought. And then it's obviously going to get better next year, too, in basketball when they add the teams because they're losing Oklahoma and Texas. And it's just like it's a grind. Like, mm-hmm. it's not easy to do it anymore. And even for Kansas, it's now a grind. And that shows kind of where we're at in high school or in college hoops right now. And you know, you do, if you don't have consistency within your starting five getting points on the board, it can be tough at times if you're relying on two players.
Kansas in this game shot 53% and lost.
Yeah, and that the offense was fine. Which is kind of crazy as I just said, but the offense was fine.
If I would have told you before the West Virginia Kansas game that KU is going to shoot 53% from the floor, Nick Timberlake's going to score 12 points in 13 minutes, Johnny Furphy is going to hit three threes, KU is going to be 14-18 from the line, and they only have 7 turnovers, you would have said
they don't
what?
Lose those games well, with those numbers.
But what would you have said if I told you that was if I told you those numbers before the West Virginia game, what would you have predicted the score to have been?
It's what Brian Haney said, right? A double digit win. Right?
I think KU by 20 or 30.
15-20 is yeah. for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
But West Virginia, they shot 52%. They were 12 of 21 from three, 21 of 25 from the line. They did have 13 turnovers, but they out rebounded Kansas by 9. and they had more second chance
give
points.
Your OPSI-SAP, exactly, your second chance opportunities. Yeah. I don't care what game you're playing, if you allow that many offensive rebounds.
Yeah.
I mean, K-State barely escaped North Alabama because of that, right?
You're right.
And they didn't escape Nebraska because of that. And so if you're not rebounding, getting on the glass, and only given one chance, it's going to be long days for you.
Here's the other big concern for Kansas, okay? They're turning around playing a game tonight. So they're going to have like a 30-minute practice, what Bill Self said they would have. And he said the biggest thing is we just need to get rest. You know why? K.J. Adams played 38 and a half minutes of the 40. Dickinson played 36. Harris played 36. Burfee played 31. McCullough played 32. The only guy that gave him anything off the bench was Timberlake in 14 minutes, had 12 points. Jackson was negative 11 in his 8 minutes on the floor. Parker Brown only played 4 minutes. I mean, that's their bench. And that's with Furphy in the starting lineup. Thank God Furphy's starting to do some things. DeJuan Harris, in 36 minutes, took 5 shots. 2 for 5, did not make a 3, had 4 points. He had 5 steals, 5 assists, no turnovers, but he had 5 points. No, 4 points. He's got to score more. It's just
you
as simple as that.
He's got he is.
Now, he shouldn't have to score more when you get 85.
No,
Bill Self's going to sit here and tell you, listen, it had nothing to do with DeJuan Harris scoring. It had nothing to do with our bench not providing anything offensively. We scored 85 freaking points. We should win. He's all about defense, and I agree with him.
Yeah.
The defense was really, really bad. But you scored 85 points. I mean, actually, it sounds great. 85, and your point guard only scored 4 and took 5 shots. So that's a good night offensively for your team. But at the same time, Harris is going to have to be more aggressive offensively, I think, for this team to get where they want to get. And I just don't know if he's the guy that's going to do that on a regular basis. Like you said, he's going to have a few games where he'll hit 4 threes, and he might score 18 points, and they're going to need it. But he's a pass-first point guard, which I love about him. I really, truly love the way he plays the game. But with this team, unless Furphy and Timberlake keep shooting like they did for one half against West Virginia, he's got to do more because there's just too much. This KU team is one sprained ankle, one broken finger, one concussion away. Concussion, you might only miss a few games, but you're one bad sprained ankle away, or a stress fracture, as we're going to talk about K-State women in a moment, or ankle fracture away from being average, which is one guy.
The team we're going to talk about later has more leniency in that, actually, too, than this KU men's basketball team does. If it's Hunter Dickinson, right?
Right.
Because that's the comparison, yeah. Right? That's the absolute parallel, is if Hunter Dickinson breaks it, something in his ankle or his foot and misses a month, they're in trouble.
Major trouble. Major trouble, no doubt. So let's shift to K-State. We'll get to the women here in a moment. K-State men trailed a majority of the game against Oklahoma State, but they came back and escaped with a 4-point victory. Arthur Kaluma with 23. K-State ended the game on an 18-7 run. They were down 7 with 7 minutes to go at home. Jerome Tang on battling through everything and winning ugly.
Well, I like the fact that we embrace winning. I've never really seen an ugly win. I've seen a lot of ugly losses. In this league, man, all you have to do is figure out how to win. And we have a team. I mean, if we're all honest with ourselves and we look at our roster and stuff, we don't have a team that you think we're going to go out there and score 90 points and it's going to look really pretty and all of that. We have to make it games like this. And I'm just thankful for winning, man. We'll figure out how to make it look cute some other time. But right now, let's just keep winning.
Now, like we talked about, K-State's schedule has been favorable to start. There's no doubt about that. It's going to get a lot tougher here coming up in the next couple of weeks. K-State's 14-4, tied atop the Big 12 standings at 4-1. Oklahoma State now 0-5 in conference play. Also tied for first is Texas Tech. They win over number 20 BYU in Lubbock. So K-State and Texas Tech 4-1. Baylor's lost 2 in a row, but they could easily be undefeated. That's one thing that's helping KU here a little bit. Is that Houston lost twice, and Baylor could have easily beaten K-State, should have beaten K-State, actually, and they should have beat Texas, but they lost on a buzzer beater to Texas, 75-73. Number 24, Iowa State, won at number 19, TCU, in a great game, 73-72. Number 7-ranked K-State women revealed some bad news on Friday. All-American center Ayoka Lee is out for roughly 4 weeks after having surgery to repair an ankle fracture. Wildcats responded on Saturday with a win in the Sunflower Showdown over KU without Lee, 69-58. jumped out to, or had a 23-8 lead early in the second quarter. KU fought back within six. K-State had too much, though. Serena Sundell, Zionna Walker each had 15. Bradley Glynn with 13. K-State women 18-1 overall, 7-0 in the Big 12. But they will have a big-time test tonight on the road. Quick turnaround in Waco to take on the Bears in their new facility. Baylor ranked 12th in the country, 15-2, 4-2 in the Big 12. Tip-off at 7:30 tonight on FS1 in Waco. We have said it throughout the season, have we not, that if the K-State women can stay healthy, and I think in particular the one person we've been talking about is Ayoka Lee. If K-State can stay healthy, in particular Ayoka Lee, K-State has a tremendous chance of making a run and maybe to the Final Four. And if you make it to the Final Four, you have a chance to win a national championship, something that K-State's done in no sports ever. And wouldn't it be crazy if the one sport they win it would be women's basketball? But this is a complete bummer. Just a complete and absolute bummer. And I must say, I am really impressed that the K-State women, without Lee, beat KU. KU's a talented basketball team that has some good wins, and KU destroyed Baylor recently. Mm-hmm. So I'm really impressed K-State won that game. If they go to Baylor and win without Lee, wow. Then maybe they can hold down the fort for a while longer than I think. But losing Lee is going to cost them, more than likely, probably in my opinion, three spots on the seed line or more.
Yeah, the good thing is they've got a couple key ones out of the way already, but as far as conference games, but it is going to be tough. Like what you said about
they are deeper
Final
than
Four
last
run,
year.
About a possible national championship if you want to dream, those things can't happen without Ayoka Lee on the court. What can happen without Ayoka Lee on the court is that you can – here's one thing that doesn't leave. The guards are playing outstanding perimeter defense this year and just outstanding defense this year. That doesn't leave when Ayoka Lee leaves the court, right? Mm-hmm. You can still have that lockdown defense. You can still do a lot of different things. And this team – I said this last week, and it's because of their depth that I feel like this is the best team – women's team that's ever played at K-State, and that depth is what's going to help you moving forward right now. You can weather a four-week storm and keep yourself in the right position here and still win. This team beat Iowa last year without Ayoka Lee on court with a way worse team. I mean, with not as even close to as much depth.
Yes.
And so if you would just weather this for 4 weeks, this is not a death sentence for the women's basketball team. This is, hey, somebody else, Imani Lester, Eliza Maupin, you're going to get some opportunities now. Take advantage of those. That's the way I looked at it. I was like, it's tough. I hated to see it, but I'm also more impressed with Ayoka Lee of putting up a double-double on a broken foot against Texas. That made that performance even more impressive.
It really did.
But it's a bummer. There's no question. And without her on the court, they can't reach the pinnacle. But they can weather it here because she'll be back if everything goes the right way. Mm-hmm. A couple weeks before the Big 12 tournament and ready for the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, if you're gonna have the injury, it's better now than obviously mid February.
Have surgery right before the season and lose the entire season like she did last year. Right. So you know there could obviously be things a lot worse.
You know, big players, and I'm not trying to be mean to Ayoka Lee, but she's a big center, okay? Mm-hmm. She's a bigger gal, and she's very athletic, no question. But this is true of the men, too. Zion Williamson, Shaq had some issues towards the end of his career. I was surprised Shaq lasted as long as he did because he had some weight issues. Well, he had to stay kind of trim. Once he started having injury issues is when he can't let himself go weight-wise. The reason I say this is not – I'm not talking about anything with weight to do with Ayoka Lee, but is when you're a bigger player, your feet – if you have a foot injury, like Yao Ming, he was 7'6". Oh, yeah. When he started having a foot injury, his career went downhill. And you have more weight because you're a bigger person pounding on your feet as you're going down the floor. And basketball is really hard on your feet and on your legs, going up and down and shifting quickly and this and that. And so your centers, your bigger players, men or women, you know, once they start to have some foot injuries or issues, that is very concerning and alarming. And we've seen some really good NBA players over the years that careers ended really early because Sam Bowie he was drafted ahead of Michael Jordan. He had all kinds of foot issues. Zion's had foot issues. So those are things to kind of keep an eye on, and hopefully it doesn't ruin Ayoka Lee, you know, her WNBA career. If she wants to go WNBA after this year, hopefully it doesn't ruin things to where she can't come back this year. But I don't think there's any doubt K-State's got to be really cautious with this. And they say roughly 4 weeks. Notice the word roughly.
Yeah.
This could end up being 6 weeks. And if it's 6 weeks, maybe she's back just in time for the Big 12 tournament or heading in the NCAA tournament. But then what's your cohesion, your chemistry? How is she stamina-wise, conditioning-wise?
Yeah, that's the thing.
So ideally, you like her back maybe the last week of the regular season, get her back into things going into the Big 12 tournament. But something to keep an eye on. When you hear 4 weeks, you gotta don't overlook the word roughly.
Yeah.
Because foot injuries can be worse than you think.
You don't know until
how's she going to heal from
the process of therapy and everything like that when that's actually going to happen. Like, you can say it, but you just everybody reacts differently. Obviously, they've got better top-notch people to take care of all that stuff than a regular person in the real world would probably. But you can't take anything for granted on that. You just got to move forward and hopefully it works out as they expect it.
Absolutely. All right, so we started the show talking Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes. A few numbers to end the show. Patrick Mahomes against the Bills in the playoffs. He's 3-0, 8 touchdowns, no interceptions. He's thrown for 918 yards and completing almost 80% of his passes. That's insane. Where's another one? Mahomes, where he ranks all-time already at the age of 28 against all other quarterbacks in NFL playoff history. He's 13-3. That's one win short from being tied for the third most ever wins by a quarterback, and he's only 28. He has the highest completion percentage of any NFL quarterback in NFL playoff history at 67%. He has the highest ever quarterback rating, QBR 106.7. The ninth most yards already, 4,500 in postseason play. The sixth most touchdown passes at 38. And his interception percentage is the lowest ever. He's done this in 16 playoff starts. He's 28, and he's been a starter in NFL for just 6 seasons, and he's already, you know, got all these numbers that he's accruing in the postseason. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I beg you to kick back and enjoy the ride. Enjoy the show. Chiefs fans, it could be gone in an instant. It can be gone in a heartbeat. You know, as K-State fans are so excited about making a run, Ioka Lee has a foot fracture, ankle fracture, and it just is Debbie Downer, right? That could easily happen to your Patrick Mahomes. Mm-hmm. He's human, you know, or you go into Baltimore game. I remember all the optimism when the Chiefs went into Buffalo back in 1994. Okay, that was a 93 season, 1994. And Joe Montana got knocked out with a concussion in the first half, and that was the end of that.
Yeah.
So everything can end quickly. You know, he can have a bad injury. NFL is a physical sport. So I think a lot of people, when they hear somebody say, enjoy the journey, like, oh, we got another 8 years to enjoy this. I can complain right now. You might not know what, it might not be as long as you think because not Mother Nature, but Father Time, some freak injury can change the whole trajectory. Bo Jackson was going that way, wasn't he? He was going to be a Hall of Fame baseball player. He might have been both, Hall of Fame football and baseball. He had a freak weird injury, and he now not even going to be in the Hall of Fame in either sport because he didn't play long enough because of a freak injury. And it can happen where you have these great careers going. Now, Mahomes, if he retired tomorrow, he's a Hall of Famer. He's got that. There's no doubt about that, even in 6 seasons. But in regards to enjoying the ride might not be as long as you think, so you better enjoy it while you're on it.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.